Part 26, Chapter 4. Somebody else had been busy in the last 2 hours. A different music was playing. It was very noble and dignified. It sounded vaguely familiar to Johnny, and then he remembered that a cadet had found a pile of what he called records. Big things if you ran a rose thorn held in a paper box around an endless circular groove and put your ear close. It sounded like 20 or 30 instruments playing. The ancient label on the record, mostly faded out, said the name of the piece was the Cleveland Symphony Orchestra, Lohengrin. This music was much like that, but deeper, fuller, quite impressive. Johnny suspected the small gray man had had a hand in that. Something from his ship? Music for the delegates to arrive by, of course. And something else that must be from the small gray man's ship. There was a screen, meshed so you could see through it, all around the firing platform, and Dr. Allen was finishing putting it up.
Disease control,
he said cryptically as Johnny passed by. Sweaty Chinese engineers crawled out of a duct hole with cheery faces. They had air circulating in and out now. The smoke had already cleared away. A good thing, thought Johnny. A lot of different atmospheres would momentarily be whiffing across the platform at the instant of coincidence of spaces, and during recoil especially. And the mobs of Chinese refugees from the village had changed too. They may have lost their village, but they had saved their possessions, and these had been scattered about. Now the untidy bundles had vanished. Children and dogs were quiet down in the rifle pits, and parents and others that had no immediate duties were standing about. They had on what must be their best clothes. An honor guard came out of a bunker and finished neatening themselves up with a tug here and a buckle there. Six of them, different nationalities, all in their best uniforms. No weapons, but the shafts of pennons. An aged Chinese gentleman. No, a Buddhist communicator dressed to look like a Chinese, wearing a silk robe with designs on it and a small cap, was taking position at the head of the honor guard. Of course, somebody who spoke Cyclo to greet the arrivals, yet who looked like a dignitary. It would be 3 or 4 minutes until the first one appeared, and Johnny walked toward the ops room. He didn't get in. The boy, Kwong, sprinted out, going somewhere fast. And Sir Robert popped out of the door and called after him.
And tell Storm along to bring that other recognition book, too!
The boy hardly checked his pace, nodding in full run. Beyond Sir Robert, the ops room was boiling with sound and movement as people worked. Johnny opened his mouth to ask how it was going, but Sir Robert answered before he could speak. Sir Robert shook his head bleakly.
They're using a new kind of bomb. The guns sometimes don't explode it. And the idiots are burning deserted cities. Our drones are still running. Why would they want to burn an empty place that used to be called San Francisco? The last drone shot we had of it, there were just two bears walking down the street. We're dealing with daft imbeciles.
Johnny made to go in past him, and Sir Robert shook his head again.
You can't do anything more than we're doing. Have you thought what we're going to tell these emissaries?
No idea,
said Johnny.
Shouldn't we get Clan Chief Fergus down here?
Nah, you know, wee chance. Edinburgh's going up in flames.
Johnny felt a contraction of his heart.
Any news of Chrissy?
They'd be down in the shelters. Donaldine is giving them all the air cover he can.
Stormalong raced in with the book. Sir Robert took a look at Johnny.
Go get yourself cleaned up, and think of something to tell these arrivals.
He shooed Johnny off toward his room and vanished into ops. He closed the door behind him so the frantic sounds wouldn't come into the platform area. Johnny walked on toward his room. Just as he was about to duck into the passage, the humming of the wires, which had been going on underneath the music, made itself known by stopping. There was a space of time, and then a slight recoil. The Huckner emissary was on the platform, noseless, holding a monocle on a stick. He was dressed in shimmering robes. He had a gold-colored hamper beside him. A bell on the screen pinged. The screen top edge lit with a purple glow all around. The Huckner picked up the hamper, looked about through his monocle, and minced off the platform. The honor guard saluted and dipped pennons. He halted well clear of the disease control fence. A messenger took the hamper from him. The Buddhist in Chinese clothes bowed. In a supercilious tone of voice, the Huckner emissary said, in Cyclo,
I am Blan Jetso, extraordinary minister plenipotentiary of the Emperor of the Huckners. Long may he reign! I am empowered to negotiate and arrange final and binding amendments to agreements or treaties in all things political or military. My person is inviolate, and any molestation cancels any agreements. Any effort to hold me hostage shall be in vain, for I shall not be redeemed by my government. At the threat of any torture or extortion, you are warned that I shall commit suicide instantly in ways unknown to you. I am not the carrier of any disease nor weapon. Long live the Huckner Empire! And how are you today?
The communicator, dressed as a Chinese, bowed and made a brief, fast speech of welcome, very pat, told him the conference would begin in about 3 hours, and led him off to a private apartment where he could rest or refresh himself. Johnny had an idea these arrivals would all be about the same, different only as to races, persons, and clothes. He was trying to think of something to tell the emissaries. It was a bit of a shock for Sir Robert to infer that it was up to him. When that grizzled old veteran didn't have any ideas. But then, he must be terribly distressed over Edinburgh. So was Johnny.